There was a woodworking magazine that came to our house just a couple of days ago, and the cover story was one that very much intrigued me. It was about how to build a lathe. A few of you may not know what a lathe is, but that's something that will turn a piece of wood so that you can use a chisel to go along it, and you can shape it in a certain way, maybe to make a baseball bat, or to make a spindle for a railing, or something of that nature. And this was how to build a lathe. But it's not the kind of lathe that you would normally find in a workshop, because this one would be made completely of wood. It would not have a motor on it, but the one who would be using it would supply the energy for it. It's a very interesting project to me, but it's a few projects down the road. But suppose you were to make this project and to end up with a lathe such as this, and somehow this lathe got a personality that could communicate back to you and said, "I know you made me to turn wood so that you could make a baseball bat or a spindle or a newel post or something of that nature, but I don't think I can do it." And you would say, "But I made you for this purpose. I made you so that I could turn wood on you and shape that wood for various purposes. Maybe it'd be a table leg." "Well, I'm sorry, I don't think I can do it." On the other hand, perhaps this lathe with a personality that's able to communicate to you says, "I don't need you. I can make all these things without you. I can do all sorts of things, and I don't care about you." Now, what would you do with that lathe once that you had built for a particular purpose? Well, since this one's made of wood, you'd probably burn it. You'd get rid of it. Maybe you would just sell it to some other unsuspecting soul. But in any case, you would get rid of it because it's not fulfilling the purpose for which you had made it. Do you realize how often people respond that way to God who has made us? It is just as foolish for us to act in this manner before God, our Creator and Redeemer. He has made us and He has given us work to do. He has given us our purpose in life, that we should glorify Him and honor Him in all of life. But sometimes we say, "I don't think I can do that." And other times we say, "Well, I can just carry out all these duties without you." Moses was one who did that. He tried to do things his own way, first of all, and then he tried to say, "I can't do what you want me to do." Let's look at Exodus chapter 3 and 4, actually. Exodus chapter 3 and 4, where we have the account of Moses before God at the burning bush. Now, the reason he is out here in the wilderness where this burning bush appears is because he has killed an Egyptian and he had to run away because he was afraid that Pharaoh was going to come after him to kill him. But he didn't like the way this Egyptian was treating an Israelite, and so he sought to set the Israelite free from the Egyptian by killing the Egyptian. And so he fled to the desert. And there he met up with a man who had a number of daughters. He married one of those daughters and was taking care of flocks in the wilderness. And beginning with chapter 3, verse 1, we read, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God." Now remember, Horeb is another name for Sinai. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. And I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land of Egypt into a good spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign that that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, What's his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites, I am. Has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Say to the Israelites, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am remembered from generation to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt, and I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the desert to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters. And so you will plunder the Egyptians. Moses answered, What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, The Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, What is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, Throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said, Reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, Put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand inside his cloak, and when he took it out, it was leprous like snow. Now put it back in your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first miraculous sign, they may believe the second, but if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it out on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Moses said to the Lord, oh Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said, who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, oh Lord, please send someone else to do it. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, what about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and his heart will be glad when he sees you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand, so that you can perform miraculous signs with it. We'll end our reading at that point as we ask God to use this portion of his word to give us understanding in it and to draw us ever closer to him and our duties before him. Who is God? That's always a question we need to be able to answer, to understand the greatness and the magnificence of God. And we can forget that in a number of ways. And so in this series of messages that we're in the middle of right now, of saints who doubted, we're dealing with now someone who is doubting the abilities that God has given to him. And that is really, in essence, a doubting of God, of the reality of God, not acknowledging that he is the Lord our God. When God called Moses, Moses asked for his name and he said, I am who I am. And that should really tell us a great deal about God, even though those are such basic, simple words in our vocabulary. Words that a child is able to speak, even in the first couple of months of learning how to speak. You know, they learn the first word is no, and then the second word is probably mama or daddy. But I and am, who? Those are simple words. What do they mean to put them together this way? Well, it means that God is, first of all, eternally the same. The words that are given here in the original are, as scholars have pointed out, are in the future tense. We have them translated for us in the present tense. And it's appropriate that we have them in the present tense because of what they're really designating. John Calvin says it designates the perpetual duration of time, that he is always the same, he is eternally the same. And so it's a term that, while dealing with the future, has its current impact right now and will continue to have that impact. He will continue to be God. He will continue to be that great I am. And often we find the name of God just reduced to the words I am, so that when Jesus, in speaking with the Jews, said before Abraham was, I am, the Jews understood that he was claiming to be God. And that's why they tried to stone him. I am who I am. God is one who completely governs himself and his whole creation. The way de Graaff put it is that God is governed by nothing outside himself. God is governed by nothing outside himself. Now, there are many people who brashly think that they are not governed by anything outside themselves. They're not going to be intimidated by others. They're going to do what they're going to do, but then they realize that they can't do everything that they want to do. God brings storms. He brings debilitating issues to people. We are governed by all sorts of things. No, we didn't intend to get those diseases, but they came to us anyway. And those diseases govern some of the things that we do. But God is not governed by anything outside of himself. He is governed completely by his own will. This is what he desires to do, therefore he will do it. And so when he came to Moses there on the mountain, Mount Horeb, in that bush that was burning, he was able to say to the bush, "You're going to burn, but you're not going to be consumed." And in much the same way, he was able to say to Moses, "I have chosen Abraham and his descendants, and I have heard the plea of these people because I have chosen to hear it. And I have chosen to respond to them in the suffering that they are enduring. And I've also selected you, Moses, to go." And just as was the case with Abraham, he did not just put out a notice in the laundromat and say, "Whoever wants to be the leader of Israel, come and meet me at such and such a place at such and such a time." But he says, "Moses, you are the one who I am sending to the elders of Israel and to Pharaoh." God sovereignly chooses and deals with his people, so that just as he had chosen the descendants of Abraham, so he gave to Moses this charge: "You are to go and you are to speak to Pharaoh." Now, I have to admit that sounds like an awesome task that not many of us would want to take on ourselves. But what Moses needed to realize, and what you and I need to realize when God gives us a charge, is that he also gives us the ability to carry out that charge and to serve him as he has called us to do. So that when Moses says, "Lord, I have never been an eloquent speaker," God is able to say to him, "Who made man's mouth?" And he's basically saying, your eloquence is not what we're depending on here. We're depending on me. We're depending on God to be able to say, "This is you are my mouthpiece, and you will be the one who leads the people of Israel out of Egypt." You see, it's when we have these kinds of doubts, these sinful doubts, that we fall into sinful attitudes towards our abilities and talents. Moses, in a portion of Exodus that we did not read, but prior to these chapters, had doubted God because, but there he was doing it from the different perspective. He was doubting God by killing an Egyptian. Now, God had already told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and it had been passed on, I'm sure, for 400 years, all the way down to Amram and Jochebed, who told it to Moses, and to Aaron, and to Miriam. that the God of our fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is going to return, is going to deliver us from this place. But Moses was taking it upon himself to try to emancipate the Israelites. Maybe you didn't think of it that way. Maybe you thought it was just a simple incident, a separate incident that was taking place. But here's what Stephen has to say about it in Acts chapter 7. Beginning with the 23rd verse, Moses was 40 years old. When he was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. He saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian, so he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them. But they did not. Now this is, of course, 40 years before Moses has received the call of God there on the mountain, Mount Horeb. That Moses, as far as Stephen is concerned, thought that the people of Israel would realize, look, I'm your emancipator. I'm the one that God will use to deliver you out of Egypt, to get you out of this slavery. But they didn't. But you see, he was doing things his own way. Instead of saying, here is God's timing, I will wait for that timing and do things as he has appointed, he took things into his own hands. And so he lived in the doubt that God would free his people in his time. Now we come 40 years later. Moses is now 80 and finally receives his life calling. He's ready to go now, and he doesn't think he's ready, but God says he's ready. And God appoints him to this purpose. You are to go and to deliver the Israelites from Pharaoh. You are to be their emancipator. And Moses, who had been so ready to do that 40 years earlier, says now, no way. I cannot speak very well. I can kill an Egyptian, but I can't speak very well. If only I could have emancipated them back then. But now I have no eloquence. I've never had any eloquence in speech. How much does God depend on our eloquence? Well, remember what we read earlier in this service in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. There in the first five verses, the Apostle Paul says, when I came to you, brothers, in Corinth, I did not come with eloquence. The very thing that Moses was missing, Paul was also missing. I did not come with eloquence or superior wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I came to you in weakness and fear and with much trembling. Exactly the place where Moses was, as he stood before the burning bush. My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on men's wisdom, but on God's power. How differently Paul looks at his abilities there. He says, I'm not eloquent either. I'm weak. We tend to put Paul on this pedestal as we look back 2,000 years at him. and say, you know, wait a minute, he's that great man. And he said, no, I am not one who was eloquent. I'm not one who was a great speaker. But he was used of God because he had the Spirit of God, and he went obediently at the command of God to do the will of God. You see, there isn't any one of us who can claim inability when God is the one who equips us. When he's the one who provides for us. When he's the one who gives us the assignment. Then we have to say, okay, he's given the assignment. He also has to give what is necessary to carry out the assignment. So I will move forward, acknowledging his gifts. You see, God is one who assures you of your abilities, or rather of his abilities, of the abilities that you need when you are called to serve and to honor him. But two of the ways that we tend to doubt God are in these two ways that Moses was doubting God. First of all, at 40, when he said, I'm going to emancipate the Israelites myself. I'll kill this Egyptian, and at least this one will be free from the oppressive work of the Egyptian. And so, taking things into his own hand, he was saying, I don't think God's going to deliver them, when indeed he had said he would. And then 40 years later, when he's 80 years old, he doubted God's gifts by claiming not to have what God had given him. God was anointing Moses with his Spirit in order that he might carry out this great task that God had given to him. And we must not doubt the gifts of God either by boasting that they are ours in and of ourselves, or when we claim not to have what God says we have. God's gifts, then, are to be used for his glory. They are to be recognized as his and to be used for his glory. There's an interesting use that the Apostle Paul makes of one of the Psalms. When you look at Psalm 68 and the 18th verse, you find that it says there, when you ascended on high, you led captives in your train, you received gifts from men, even from the rebellious, that you, O Lord, might dwell there. But when Paul cited this in his letter to the church in Ephesus, in Ephesians chapter 4, in the 8th verse, he says, this is why it says, when he ascended on high, he led captives in his train and gave gifts to men. Psalm 68, he received gifts from men. And Ephesians 4, he gave gifts to man. Is it that Paul just delights in misquoting Scripture and twisting it to his own purpose? No, not at all. He does this by the Spirit of God. He changed that word from received in order to the word gave. And what he's really pointing out here is that as God redeems people, he uses the gifts that he has already given them, and he redeems them for his own glory so that they might be used for his purposes rather than being used for evil purposes. And if God has redeemed you, if he has brought you to himself, you have gifts that you had before you came to faith in him. But those gifts now you are able to use for the glory of God and the advancement of his kingdom, and not just for whatever purposes that you think you ought to use them for. Think of the Apostle Paul. Think of the abilities that he had before he went to Damascus. How powerful he was, even though he did not consider himself to be eloquent. But he had a zeal for God that was marvelous. And when he was redeemed then on the way to Damascus, God turned that zeal into something that would be directed for his kingdom and for his own glory. Think of the talents, the abilities, the gifts that God has given you. Have you used them for an evil purpose? But how might they be used now? How might they be used for the glory of God? They are not, these are things that do not belong to us alone. But instead, we acknowledge the gifts as things that belong to Him. They belong to God. So that says, well, I can't be boastful about the gifts that I have. On the other hand, I can't say that I don't have the gifts when God has given them to me. So that when He gives me an assignment, I use what He has given to me for His glory. We don't have to dance around in the end zone to tell everybody how great we are. I remember one of my teammates in football. Other teammates would say of him, whenever he scored a touchdown, he needed a bigger helmet. We begin to think that the talents are ours alone, rather than things that God has given to us. And so while we receive honors from others, we must do so recognizing that these things that we have been able to do, we have done by the grace of God. And I think one of the things that Christians find most difficult is to receive praise. How do you receive praise? Because the one who is humble says, thinks, well, I need to be humble about this. I'm a Christian. I need to be humble about it. And so, oh, well, no, it was nothing. And, well, wait a minute. It was God's gift to you. And God enabled you to do that by His grace. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that you go out and just announce to the world how wonderful you are. Greatness is something that makes itself known. It doesn't have to be advertised. And that's hard for us to remember sometimes. That our greatness comes from God, and as it shows itself, it will bring glory to God, and you don't have to advertise your own greatness. But at the same time, you must acknowledge that the gifts that God has given you are from Him, and they are to redound to His glory. So let God be magnified by receiving and using the gifts that He gives to you. Turn to Him that your abilities and gifts may be redeemed for His glory. If you have not yet come to trust in Jesus Christ, then you don't know how to use your gifts for His glory, or to recognize that they are from Him and to credit Him with them. And so we would plead with you to turn to Jesus Christ and to trust in Him and His grace for the mercy that you need in order that you might come to Him and rejoice in Him, and that those gifts that He has given to you might be redeemed for His glory. But also be satisfied with the gifts that He has given to you. A bit of personal testimony on this is that a number of years ago, I was envious about the abilities of certain other people. And I think that I was probably more envious because they were able to perform in front of others and to do certain things and to be credited with those abilities. And as I was envious about those things, I realized God has given me gifts too, and I must use them for His glory. Think about what God has enabled you to do, the gifts that He has granted you. not to be envious of what others are able to do, but to recognize the gifts of God toward you. It is the fool who says there is no God. And that's exactly what we are saying if we boast of the gifts as if they were our own, and when we doubt that God has given us what he has appointed. We're actually saying there is no God. But let your doubts be dispelled by coming to know God and to know him clearly, to know him as the sovereign one. God is the one who made your mouth, and he did so for his glory.